Hello, welcome again to Comic Connoisseurs. Tonight we'll be talking about Invincible Season 1, the complete Season 1 review slash retrospective slash whatever the fuck we want to call it. Of course, I'm my co-host, JT from Saskatoon.
Oh dear lord, the violence.
Also with us is Red Ink.
This is a damn good movie. Or a damn good show, yeah?
Yeah. So, I gotta be honest with you. Going way back when the first announcement for this Invincible animated Amazon Prime series came out, I did not have high hopes. I certainly didn't think we'd get more than one season. And I also thought we were going to get, if we were going to get it made, it was going to be a play-by-play of the original comic. And I'm happy to say I'm wrong on all accounts there.
Yeah, they're making an animated series out of a comic book life. Of course, I'm going to check it out. I don't recall ever reading beforehand that there were going to be hour-long episodes, which was one of the most pleasant surprises for me in this series. And certainly gives them a little more wiggle room in terms of storytelling with an animated medium. Yeah. What did you think, Red?
I liked it. It was made like... They had Robert Kirkman working on the story, so it was made in hindsight. Like, all the mistakes that he had made and all that shit, he knew how to fix them. He knew to add to the story so he could surprise fucking people who read the comic.
Yeah. Because I promise you that lots of people would... I wouldn't say satisfied, but they'd be okay or even happy with the fact that if they did a play-by-play. I like the fact that they went way off the... I wouldn't say way off, but they went off the rails, and the comic is an outline, it's a suggestion now, and that makes this a lot more meaningful. Like, the scenes that hit you, that wrench your gut, they still are somewhat intact here. They move stuff around, but they're still somewhat intact here. Like, you know, spoiler, the final episode, that moment, I'd have you, Dad. That was one of the best moments in the comic, If anything, I think they made it go
ahead. Let's not do Falcon and Winter Soldier and just fucking jump all over the place. Let's handle it in succession, please.
Sorry, I apologize. So, at the beginning, beginning is very much like the first issue of the comic. Like, the whole thing with, you have Mark working at the burger place, and second bag he throws just flies out of the little door where he's like, oh, I just got my powers. It's great, and yeah, I don't know what else I can really say. Go ahead, Red.
I like the way they handle it. If you read the comic, you knew, like, as soon as Nolan was told, you saw his expression fucking change. You knew what was going to happen.
Yes.
It's a lot harder to tell from the comic.
Like, in the comic, there is no expression change. You just fast forward to, like, issue 3, and then suddenly he kills the fucking Guardians for no fucking reason.
Yeah,
but you can tell something's up with him as soon as Mark gets his powers. Like, his whole attitude changes and shit. And it slowly gets worse and worse and worse.
Well, even that first reaction, like, if you're, you know, folks like us who have read the comics and know what's coming, we're like, uh-oh. But and I think, you know, anyone else that sees this, it's like, you could read that as a dad, like, hot damn, my boy's going to be like me. And, you know, he can... do all the father-son things a man might want to do if his son also has superpowers.
The other thing I have to add is the opening with the Guardians of the Globe was great because honestly, we didn't see much of the Guardians except like 3-4 pages until they all get mowed down and murdered. And
well, they got their shit pushed in, that's for sure.
And in the comics, it was extremely one-sided. Nolan pretty much speed blitzed all of them, including the speedster Red Racer, Red Rush, and he just fucking decimated all of them before they could even blink, and only the Immortal was able to say, I never liked you, and then he died anyways. It's like, but here, what they did was much better with the fact that they all put up a fight, and they got their licks in.
Yeah. They showed that if they were ready to take on Nolan, they probably could have took him down.
Yes.
Yeah. And unlike the comics, we get those little moments with the Guardians prior to them getting the call to assemble at their mountaintop headquarters like that. And it gives us just like two or three of them, just enough to like kind of like get their hooks into us, and we like them. So when you have that bit with Red Rush and his wife, and she's unhappy with where they're living, and he's like, you just went and fought crime, didn't you? Like that little bit. And it was like, oh dude, you got to deal with that now. Oh, thank God he's got this call to action. Or the, well, I forget, was a Martian Man who's, you know, he's like the mentor, protector of this little girl in this, disused apartment building. And then Nolan goes to town.
That actually saddened me. I always wondered what the fuck happened to that little girl.
It made you feel like these people had lives. And I think that that was a great part of it, because literally in the comics, I mean, Red Rush actually has a similar scene in the comics with his wife. It's a lot shorter, though. Honestly, like I said, the fact that it opened with the attack on the White House, and we got to see them as a team working together, and we get a sense that the fact that they work really well together, that they are the pantheons of this Earth, and the bright, shining example of heroism and all that, it's fantastic. It's great. It makes you give a fuck about them. And I think the other thing I have to add is... You know, I didn't mind a lot of the race and or gender changes they did to the minor characters in the animated versus the comic, because the comic, most of the background characters are one note. So changing them to at least make them more visually interesting or even more interesting overall is a plus, in my opinion.
Well, I didn't mind it either, but some parts came off as annoying, like Mark's best friend there being over the top gay from the start. Just, oh my God,
I agree.
Like, there's nothing wrong with having a gay best friend. It's a fucking trope in comics and in stories. But Jesus Christ, whoever wrote that just went over the fucking top with this guy.
What I liked in the comics, what's the name of the friend again?
William.
What I liked about William in the comics is he doesn't really, he's just a normal teenage guy. He doesn't know what he is for a while, like a normal teenage guy. Just like Mark himself, just trying to figure out who he is, too. Like, a lot of the beginning of him, a lot of the teenage characters are not fully baked, and that's great about it. It's, because William very, very, very briefly dated Adam Eve, and I'm actually kind of sad that they cut one of my favorite panels in the comic, which is where...
You can't do that panel.
I love that! It's hilarious, because they mirror it again. It's for listeners who haven't read Invincible, the comic, shame on you, first of all. Second of all, in the comic, there's this scene where William asks Mark to fly him, because he wants to see what it's like to fly, and Mark flies with William, holding William, and Mark has this look on his face. It's like, oh my God, look on his face, and he goes, this is so gay. And the funniest thing is when William started dating Eve, he asked Eve to fly him too. And it's almost the exact same pose, exact same panel structure. And Eve is carrying William and goes, this is so gay. It's great.
Yeah.
It's funny, but you can't do that shit.
No, you definitely can't. And just to go back to the whole, like, where Mark says, well, my power's kicked in today. When no reaction from Nolan in the comics, that's one of my favorite bits, where he's like, that's nice, son, can you pass the peas, dear? Like, there was something just, I love that bit. That's one of my favorite bits in that first issue. But yeah, I mean, I love the demonstration, or not demonstration, like the way they slowed stuff down. And the animation, portrayed the Guardian's powers in, the meat grinder that was the end of this episode. Like, you see the bruises growing on Nolan as Red Rush is, like, pounding on him at the same time as he's, squishing his head into jelly.
Red Rush is literally wearing his fist downs into stubs because he was like, this is my only fucking chance. I don't care if I don't have hands. This is my only chance to to get out of here. Is I just have to keep punching.
Yeah, because you see it. It's really. I had to watch it twice before I noticed that. Like you see him like straight punching, and then you see it where his hand, his wrists are broken. It's, you know, very much everyone feared the T-Rex kind of pose, and he just kept going before Nolan finally, you know, popped his head like a zit.
Yeah, and he's actually is very, very slowly building bruises on Nolan's chest, and that was actually, you know.
The scene is also from Red Rush's perspective, because just before that, when he's talking to his girlfriend, he's like, the world is so fucking slow to me, and blah, 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 from my perspective.
Yeah.
And if there's, like, if it showed the fucking scene at actual time and speed, it'd just be Nolan crushing Red Rush.
Yeah.
Just, that's it.
And then suddenly his shirt would be ripped open and there'd be a bruise on his chest.
Yeah.
The other thing I have to add is at the very beginning of the fight before Nolan gets his hand on Red Rush, Red Rush was like the MVP of the team until that point because he was like deflecting Nolan's punches and pulling people out like half an inch away from Nolan's haymakers.
Yeah. Yeah, you'd think Warrior Woman, like the Wonder Woman analog, would have gotten in a couple of licks. It was like Red Rush, Martian Man, and the Immortal did most of the lifting in that fight. But
War Woman and fucking the Immortal just beat the shit out of Nolan when fucking Martian Man ties him up.
Yeah.
Then he just reaches over for that little zit and then pops it.
Yeah, and then we got, like, the Green Ghost was taken out, like, nothing, and
partially her fault because, well, not her fault, but partially because Nolan did some psychological warfare by throwing the dead body of Darkwing at her, and she's, like, so horrified she couldn't phase.
Technically speaking, you guys should love that death, because that's Sonequa Martin Green, Michael Burnham from Discovery.
Yeah.
I don't hate the actress.
I don't hate the actress. I hate the fucking show.
Like fucking, I said.
The most satisfying death to me, and it's the most petty fucking death to me, and that's personal, is when Darkwing gets fucking killed. Because I'm like, this is what Superman would do to fucking Batman. There'd be no fucking kryptonite ring. There'd be no fucking preparation. He would just fucking grab him and smack him around.
But Red, prep time.
Prep time in my ass.
Prep time.
A guy who can move faster than you can fucking see.
Contingencies.
And honestly, how long did Aquarius, or is it Aquarius or Aquarius or Aquarius? The fish man. Like, how much water did he think he was going to need? Because he actually kind of held Nolan back a little bit, but then you see the pressure lessen and lessen, and it's like, uh-oh. And then just, because he got the Hulk Loki treatment, if I remember correctly.
Nolan grabbed Poor Woman's fucking mace and smacked his head clean okay. off.
Well, who it was, got the...
It was Batman.
Right. But yeah, no, like that whole fight is just like, God damn.
And then, again, it's way better than what was in the comic, because in the comic it was literally you blink and you miss it, they're all dead.
Yeah. And you think, okay, they're starting it off dark with this episode, but you get into the second one when the Flaxons show up. And then Nolan goes into their world and I remember Red saying, off mic in the chat when that came out, he's just like, Omni-Man's a scary motherfucker.
Well, if you read the fucking comic, you know Nolan got a Zenkai boost from getting beat down.
Yeah.
And that was basically him testing out his fucking powers and ripping apart that old planet.
Yeah.
And I was going to say that, again, speaking about the animation and series, like that scene, because you have that heavy use of black and red. I love how that presented to us, how that looked. Like it just seemed to intensify the carnage of Omni-Man going to town like that.
I like it. Like my favorite part is his quote, because it's so fucking double-sided. Like it has so many fucking meanings where he's like, Earth isn't yours to conquer. In other words, he's saying, you're not supposed to do that. You don't do that. But he's also saying, it's mine to fucking conquer.
I call dibs.
Yeah.
Very much
a fuck around and find out kind of moment.
I have to be honest with you. If I had any animation complaints about Invincible, and this is splitting of the tiniest of hairs, it is the use of CGI for, like, the crowds running away scenes with the Flaxons attack. Well, again, tiniest of hairs.
The animation for most of the scenes isn't the best. It's literally just sliding the cell across the fucking screen.
Right.
The fight scenes are the only part that have complicated animation.
Absolutely true. But like I said, the if I had one complaint, it's the CGI for the crowds, Flaxons. But again, yeah. Splitting of hairs, totally admitted ahead of time that splitting of hairs. Because I understand that to get this series on in time with the animation staff that they could hire, with the cost that they could afford, they had to do that. So again, I like the Teen Team voices, most of them. I gotta be honest with you, I didn't like Rex's voice actor at first, but the more I watched, the more I was warming up to him, because at first it's very asshole guy. It kind of almost reminds me of, I know it's not the same guy at all, but it's reminiscent of the guy who did the Link voice of the 90s Zelda cartoon. Excuse me, princess, kind of voice.
It's the guy from Brooklyn Nine-Nine that does his fucking voice. Like
Sandberg?
No, not Andy Sandberg.
Jason Mantzoukas.
Ah. Yeah,
it's a guy who, like, whenever they're fucking digging around or something, you'll find him hiding in a closet.
Ah.
Yeah, it's the Pimento. Kind
of, like, yeah, that's kind of why they darkened his skin, because his actor is actually Greek. And I think they just made him Greek as well. Made Rex Greek as well.
Yeah. I loved the choice voice for Robot. You get Zachary Quinto, like new Spock, just doing that very monotone kind of voice, and he does it very well.
He sounds like a fucking robot, so why not?
I know. That's why I love it.
A little Siler in there too.
Yeah. But then you get Kari Payton, like Cyborg from Teen Titans, is Black Samson, and I love what he does with that voice. Is he tries to give it like that Danny Glover Lethal Weapon, I'm too old for this shit kind of gravitas, because in the comics, Black Samson's this superhero who, like, you know, he's been around for quite a while, not as long as the Immortal, but, you know, he's a veteran. I like Jason Mantzoukas as Rex. And we haven't even mentioned who voices Invincible and Omni-Man. We got Steve Yeun, who played Keith in Voltron Legendary Defender. Canadian actress Sandra Oh is Debbie, the mom. And God's gift to mankind, J.K. Simmons, the one true J. Jonah Jameson, is Omni-Man.
Mark, I need pictures of Spider-Man right now.
It's actually they all do grade A, you know, Emmy-worthy performances, in my opinion. Every one of them. I can't pick a voice actor that I thought was terrible in this. Like I said, early complaints about Rex's voice in the first couple episodes, but as more episodes went by, it started growing on me. It actually started growing on me. Like even Doc Seismic, I kind of liked his, quippy delivery of, what was it, like a minor in political studies and African dance. That the way he delivered that was hilarious to me.
Yeah, because that's
gender studies or something.
Gender studies and African dance. I'm like, the way he says it is great.
Just looking here, Chris Diamantopoulos. That's the guy who voices the new Darkwing Duck on the reboot DuckTales series. Yeah, I love that delivery too. I mean, they're so many great voice actors, but yeah, like the thing I love the most about the Grayson family is, like, they sound like a family. Like, it's not just voice actors doing a very good job. Like, they sound like Sandra Oh and J.K. Simmons is Steve Young's mom and dad. Like, it has that ring of truth to it. even got when you look down the list on the wiki of, like, you know, some of the characters, like, you, of course, you know, Mark goes to Reginald Vell Johnson High, so Principal Winslow is voiced by Carl Winslow himself,
which is nice, which is cute.
Yeah, that's a nice shout out, and he also comes back in a later episode. Reginald Vell Johnson also voices one of my favorite dumb villains in the series, the Tether Tyrant, in that one fight. But the one that I was surprised that the subtlety of his performance, the one that I loved the most out of the second episode, was Walt Goggins as Cecil Stedman. For listeners who, again, you should hang your head in shame if you haven't read Invincible, Cecil is the Nick Fury of the Invincible universe. And
when Cecil first appeared, I was like, oh my God, his voice is so wrong. Because to me, I kind of pictured like a Martin Sheen kind of voice, like a raspy, I've smoked for fucking 30 years kind of fucking voice.
Six packs a day.
Yeah, actually. But then it eventually grew on me, just like Ben said, Rex's fucking voice grew on him.
You know, if before this came out, you know who I would pick for Cecil? Robert Patrick.
That would have been pretty good. Especially since it wasn't that great a TV show. There's this TV series on CBS called Scorpion where he played like this government agent who handled this team of geniuses. And it's just his natural raspy voice like that. Yeah, no, that would have been great as Cecil. And also, it's another thing about how they play with the timeline of the comics and like how first episode we have the Guardian's death and that didn't happen until like three issues in. Cecil doesn't show up until like after the revelation that Omni-Man is a bad guy.
He pokes his head in, but he doesn't do much.
Okay, I missed that.
Same with Damien Darkblood, whatever his name is, the demon detective. He literally was there as a joke. He shows up at maximum five panels throughout the entire comic.
I have a feeling that's what's going to happen in episode one. He's going to return. Oh, it was fucking Omni-Man this whole time.
Yeah.
No.
And he's going to get laughed at by that secretary.
Yeah, it's... and, you know, visually, I can't help, but I think I said this before. Like, in the comic, the Damien is a lot more like Rorschach or even like The Question in his look and the fact that he goes, just like Rorschach did in Watchmen. In the visual of him in this cartoon is definitely an homage to Hellboy, absolutely, and I think that was obvious.
Because I actually read an article the other day talking about, you know, what was different in this first season versus the comics. And Damien's design I always thought was kind of dumb because it kind of looks like he's wearing like some sort of yellow head sock and then like this.
He's wearing a fucking
New Gods.
Luchador mask. Yeah, very much that. It kind of looks like he's got this weird luchador mask thing with like the trench coat and the hat. Although voiced, again, the man has yet to turn in a bad voice acting performance. It's Clancy Brown as Damien Darkblood. it's the Kurgan, it's Mr. Krabs. And you know, we kind of end the episode with Mark meeting Alan the Alien, voiced by Seth Rogen.
And this is going to get really expensive in season three.
Possibly.
Well, he is producing the show, so he might take a fucking break might charge them less. I don't know.
He might charge the bare minimum that SAG allows. Because that is a thing that they do.
Yeah. And, you know, when you go into the third episode, I love the subtlety of the writing and Walton Goggins' performance. Even from the second episode going into the third, you know, with the funeral, he already suspects, you know, something's wrong.
To me, Cecil knew from the fucking moment it happened.
Yeah.
Because he had the suit on him.
Yeah.
He obviously studied the suit and then fucking put it back.
Yeah. This is a guy who has expertise in superhuman affairs for at least, 50 years? Because he goes in the goop every night and keeps them like almost their version of like the Infinity Formula. He knows, and they established really on that he knows. And he also established really early on that he can't do anything about it because he's not equipped to handle Nolan.
Like, the only choice, the only chance they had was the fucking Guardians, and they got nothing now.
Yeah.
They got murked.
Yeah, like, no, like Mark was their best chance, and even then, he knew that that wasn't a great chance.
Yeah. I don't think he knew right away. I certainly suspected, but I don't think, like, from Jump Street that he knew, but he's looking at Nolan with the 1,000-yard Clint Eastwood stare, and is like, you motherfucker.
Before we did this, like yesterday, I rewatched the whole series, and I'm like, he had that fucking suit. He had to have studied it. Like, he knew from fucking the second episode that Nolan did this. He was just keeping it on the down low.
Yeah.
Because he knew that if he showed even a sign that Nolan could catch, that he knew that,
like, if he said anything to Debbie would tell Nolan. If he said anything to Mark would tell Nolan. He had to keep it really fucking down.
Because this guy can... I don't know, in the comics, does Omni-Man have super hearing?
No. Not really, but the ears are the weak point of the Vulturemite. They were able to... Many times, Robot, Cecil, many other people used a specific kind of sound frequency to incapacitate the Vulturemites in the past. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know, scratch that.
The Vulturemites' powers are super strength, super speed, flight, invulnerability. They have four powers.
Yeah. Scratch the what I said earlier, because the sound frequency worked only on Mark. I don't remember them ever using that on Nolan or any other Vulturemite, only on Mark. So,
it's because Mark was front and center. Never showed Nolan fight Robot or anybody.
Okay, true, but I'm just saying that we can't say all Vulturemites.
Hmm.
Yeah. And, you know, we got the Guardians reforming, with Robot being in charge, and you have the scene where Eve finds out that Rex is a douche and has been cheating on her. This is...
They kind of hint that he did it before.
Yes. Yeah.
But, you know, talking about, again, Jason Manzoukas' vocal performance, is something in that scene where he gets busted, that was kind of the turning point for me in going from... It's just really annoying with the voice that, okay, there's something, he's doing something here that, you know, kind of made me turn the corner on him. Well, and then you have the whole thing where Mark has his first date with Amber.
Yes. Now, with Rex, I give Rex the tiniest bit of leeway. He's still an asshole. And the only thing I can say about that is in the comics, he did somewhat redeem his character by genuinely mellowing out and not being as much of an asshole until his, spoiler alert, sacrifice. If you ever read his comic book origin, you kind of get it because his parents literally sold him and traded him for like a newer model. And that's like the shittiest thing ever.
Yeah.
You're fucking up my childhood, Robot, and it's already fucked up.
Yeah, that's a great hint of that. But like I said, like, oh my God, I fucking hated that scene in the comic when you know, Rex escapes, you know, runs away from, like, the scientists, and he goes all the way to the fucking, to his fucking house, and he looks through the window, and he sees his parents celebrating with his younger sibling that they had without him. And, like, he realized he meant nothing to them. Fucking punch in the gut.
I mean, this whole first season, it's nothing but emotional gut punches.
Right. That was in the comics, and like I said, it was horrible.
Like, that's the great thing I like about the Invincible comic, is nobody's perfect.
You're right.
Nobody's put on a fucking pedestal.
Like,
Everybody makes mistakes. Everybody's an asshole. Like, even Mark's a fucking asshole.
Oh, Mark goes full asshole later in the comics. But like I said, I don't like Rex's asshole behavior. I think he redeemed himself in the comics later on. But after I read his origin, I get it. I get why he is the way he is. I get it. But that's like I said, Amber. Let's talk about Amber, because at first I liked the changes in Amber, because like, okay, there's a little bit more substance in here. She's not just the pretty girl. I just think later on they added way too much to her, because it's not enough that, okay, she has a little bit more personality. She's a little bit more quirky and clever. It's, you know, they added too much. I said this to Red off air once, but have you ever seen the Robin Williams movie The Birdcage, JT?
A couple of times. It's been a while.
Yeah. Well, there's this whole thing where Robin Williams is a gay guy, and he has a gay lover played by what's his name from The Producers. Great actor, by the way, and I feel terrible I forgot his name.
It's the voice of Timon from Lion King.
Yes. And
Nathan something.
They're trying to de-gay their flat to sort of give the image that they're just a regular couple, and having like his son's fiance's conservative parents coming to visit them, and they're de-gaying the flat, and the people helping them clean it up bring in a giant fucking crucifix. And Robin Williams says, "No, no, no, no. We're just subtracting, not adding." And that's what I feel like they did with Amber. It's like, okay, they're subtracting some of the vapidness, some of the shallowness, some of the pretty girl bullshit. And then they're trying to add too much on to compensate. And they added way too much because, okay, it's nice that she volunteers at the shelter. It's nice that she's really clever. But then they just keep on adding more and more and more until it's like, it's like she's on paper the perfect woman, to the point where she's the one who inspired Eve to become like this helping the world in the middle of the forest thing that, like in the comics, Eve came about that on her own. Like,
yeah.
It's way too much addition to Amber.
I agree with you on that. Like, Amber is voiced by Zazie Beetz, like Domino from Deadpool 2. And, you know, I had a conversation with a friend of mine on Facebook where he's like, do you think they added so much simply because they got a woman of color to voice the character?
Yes.
Yeah. Because, yeah, like you said, Ben, like in the character, Amber's, she's more mean girls than...
She's not mean girls. She's not even a horrible girl. It's just she's just a pretty popular girl. She's not overly mean or overly terrible, but at the same time, she's a teenage girl.
She doesn't have much of a character in the comics.
Exactly. She's just a teenage girl. She's just there, and
like I'm sorry to say, but she's literally a plot device. She's just there to get between Mark and Eve.
Yes, she's a road bump to the waifu.
And she's the Lori Lamaris between Mark's Clark and Eve's Lois.
I'll upgrade her and say she's the Lana Lang.
Well, in the animated series.
But and again, I just want to note one thing. All the pauses I said about the dishes, the Amber, everything I said that's great about her, everything I said that I liked about her, not once they add person of color to that, because I think number one, I think her animation design is way hotter than her comic design, but number two, I think that doesn't really matter.
It shouldn't matter, is the point.
Yeah. But again, I think they made her way too perfect, way too caring, way too everything. I think they added too much, and we'll see how things go from here.
Well, in my opinion, that has to do with a lot of people's reaction, because they made her way too perfect and way too caring and blah, blah, blah. And suddenly she just turns on Mark.
Yeah.
And people are expecting her to be this goddess on high, like on this pedestal. But now she doesn't understand Mark. Now she's angry at Mark. And it kind of, like, I saw people, like, literally flip on her. Like, oh, I fucking hate Amber. I wish she wouldn't be in the story anymore. Blah, blah, blah.
No, it's...
No, it's...
I think they tried a little too hard.
And,
but...
Yeah. One thing I have to add about Amber is... if you've read the comics, and I'm going to keep dipping into the comics, and I apologize to people who haven't read it, but if in the comics, the reason why Amber ultimately left Mark was because he was just not available. And that was it. She dated the first guy she met at college that wasn't Mark, because this guy was available. That was the one thing. She even literally said that. That was the reason that, you know, Mark wasn't available. That's the reason why.
Yeah. And then you get, going into the fourth episode, we have, again, something, the Martian squids. When did they first show up in the comic, Ben?
Oh, they showed up easily after Omni-Man left Earth. I think it was the second storyline after that, because if I recall correctly, and I haven't read the comic in about 2 weeks, so I'm sure Red's going to correct me. The first major storyline after Omni-Man left was about the Atlanteans, and then I think the second one was the Martians.
Okay, but you know, we have that, and you know, it's that learning lesson for Mark. Like, you got to pay attention when you're being a superhero, because you know, the Martians kidnap the astronauts and they're going to be executed because you're going to release these things into the universe and kill everybody. And while that's happening, Nolan takes Debbie on a vacation, but it's basically just a mass he's gaslighting. That's the word. Thank you. He's gaslighting her to, you know, allay her suspicions of everything that's going on. Which... it's the one thing in the comics, like, you get it in the comics and you get in the animated series, but the lead up to, like, the last episode where Omni-Man is just working Invincible like that, I don't remember him being this insidiously manipulative in the comics.
No, because there was no mystery.
There was no time either. It was, I mean... I won't act like it went blazingly fast, but the most we saw of Omni-Man was him, like, you know, being the dad figure to Mark. And, you know, we saw a lot more Omni-Man in the animated, I think, at least quality Omni-Man time, with him interacting with Cecil, him interacting with Damien, him interacting with a lot more people here. Like, I don't even think he gave as long a eulogy at the Guardian's funeral versus the comic.
And I mean, in the comic, I think it's like a couple panels you see him speaking, but it's not played out the way it is in the series. And also with the fourth episode, like, I really liked, like, throughout these first four episodes, Damien Darkblood just plodding along, putting it together, being an actual detective. And then Cecil, you know, sends him to hell because... yeah, I know already, but I'm not ready to deal with this yet.
Yeah, basically, if I deal with this right now, we're all dead.
Yeah. And then you get we got two recurring characters from the comics, the Mahler twins, both voiced by Keith Michael Richardson. I just love the way he basically... I would love to see a video of him in the recording booth doing that voice, just to see him talking to himself back and forth.
I'm pretty sure they do two tracks.
But we get the end here where, you know, the Mahler has escaped the Mahlers have escaped from prison, and he's cloning himself in this, you know, makeshift lab in this rundown warehouse, and we find out that, you know, robots watching him, and he steals Rex's DNA because that's something that I didn't think they were going to get to that quickly in the show.
Yeah, Rex's DNA also happened after Omni-Man left Earth.
Yeah.
It basically took, like, the first 25 to 30 comics and then compiled them to season one.
Yeah, and they also compressed and moved stuff around to where they made a lot more logical sense as well, because Rex moving this early is just adds a lot more to his character, because I don't think we really knew that Rex was a robot and the real, I mean, robot was, you know, we don't know that robot, Rudy Robot was a real, wasn't a real robot until, I mean, geez, what was it, like issue 24, 25? Like, it was a while, and, you know, Omni-Man long since left Earth, and I think that that moves stuff along, makes the character a lot more interesting. And the other thing I have to add is, I really like the fact that when we got to, you know, Robot, you know, doing all these things to help Monster Girl survive her brutal beating by Battle Beast.
You're skipping ahead.
What? Okay.
You're skipping ahead.
I apologize. Let's back up then. Let's back up. So, yeah, everything's jumbled around, super jumbled around. And if anything, what's next? What's next in the chronology?
Episode 5, That Actually Hurt, where Debbie finds Darkblood's notepad that was stashed in her closet. I don't know if we actually saw that in the show or if I just ended up.
Yeah, she actually did find it in the show.
Yeah,
and very reminiscent again of Watchmen with the notebook at the very end of Watchmen. I can't help but feel that Kirkman was doing a little homage.
Well, I mean, Darkblood kept doing that a lot. And we get I love that bit of her, like, she finds the bloody super suit that Nolan just has in a trash bag hidden over their kitchen cupboard for some reason, and the notepad, and she beautiful minds a plan to keep Nolan away for like 20 minutes. Like, hey, do you want to go to this place in Italy for the wine, and France for this bread, and here, there, and everywhere? So he's
playing hopscotch. She didn't send him for bread. She just sent him to Italy.
Well, there's a couple of different destinations she had on that map. It's just she comes up with this plan. Bread was not one of
them. Bread was not one of them. That was actually an important point that Red pointed out.
So when she has this plan to, like, keep away, so, like, she searches for and then finds the suit, and it's just something I love in the animation. Like, you see, like, the uncertainty in her face when Nolan comes back, and he doesn't suspect that she suspects yet, but it's just this very tense sort of situation. And then Mark meets Titan, voiced by Mahershala Ali, and he basically cons Mark, like the comics, cons Mark into helping him take out Machine Head, this mob boss, and...
Yeah, and
we get introduced. Sorry, you go, Ben.
And Titan, this story with Titan actually does happen again post Omni-Man leaving. So this was moved in a lot earlier because it was Cecil who actually said, "Give him a shot. Let's see what he wants to do," because Cecil was like the man in the chair for Mark in his first early adventures after Omni-Man left, and in the cartoon, they made it to where Mark trusting Titan was a learning learning experience for him about not trusting everybody with a sob story. Well, in the comic, there are elements of that there, but Cecil pretty much gave him the go ahead of, okay, yeah, go ahead, let's do it, let's see where this goes.
Yeah, and we see Mark and Titan get worked by Machine Head's crew. Like I said, we got Tether Tyrant, we got Kursk, who's like this electro type character, and we get, as I've said before, one of my favorite villains in Invincible Comics, Battle Beast, voiced by Worf himself, Michael Dorn.
You forgot Furnace. How can you forget the notable, lovable villain Furnace?
Furnace and Vulcanus, or I forget how you even say his name. And, you know, they get work. The teen shows up, like you said, and everyone gets incredibly messed up by Battle Beast. And then Battle Beast is like, this brings me no glory whatsoever. And he just GTFOs.
Yeah.
And we get that lovely bit with Donald and Cecil in the GDA lab where it's like, doesn't matter what we do to his blood, nothing works.
Voltramite TNA doesn't give a shit.
Yeah. He's like, what's that? Oh, it's called anthrax. Smells like lavender.
I have a feeling they're going to clone Mark.
Yeah, I was trying to do some version of the Invincible War.
Yeah.
I hate the Invincible War in the comics, and that's, again, jumping into a spoiler. I just think it's one of those weird low points in the comic.
Like, they're cutting out some storylines, and I hope that Armstrong, Levy, and the Invincible War are cut out. I have a feeling they're going to bring Armstrong, Levy in season two.
I think they'll do that. Sorry, Hugo Red.
The only reason why I suspect that is Kirkman has said that if it goes beyond the comic, he's going to continue to write stories. Yeah. And one of the fucking extra storylines that he dropped was Armstrong Levy's son coming to this world.
Yeah, Armstrong Levy's son. Yeah, I remember that.
Well, I think they could do the Invincible War, but, you know, in the sixth episode, we meet D.A. Sinclair, who's this cyberneticist, mad scientist who's double smart because he, in a cave with a bunch of scraps, creates something that can stand up fairly well to Viltrumites.
Stand up to Mark, who is...
Well, and Omni-Man, when you got like the six of them dogpiling him like that,
they annoyed him, and they were able to... I would say if Omni-Man was a full-grown adult, the six of them were like six chihuahuas.
Saying this guy creates something that, you know, with some refinement could pose a threat someday. But we get that, and you could do the Invincible War of, you know, they clone Mark, and then Sinclair applies the reanimin process to these clones, you know, maybe. But, you know, we get the university visit in the next episode where we meet Sinclair, and it's basically the breaking point for Mark and Amber's relationship. Also, and as much as William was way over the top gay, the whole thing in this episode of him wanting to go to the school because, you know, he wants to meet this guy that, you know, it was his first person he was ever with sexually, and he really liked the guy. It's kind of, I mean, it's tropey, but that whole thing where the power of love saves this guy, and she's still incredibly messed up by what happened to him, but there's some hope there. And what did you think of how they handled Sinclair in the show versus the comic?
It's about the same, honestly. Like, he always came off as this scumbag scientist that is more interested in just furthering his science than anything getting his way, anything ethical, anything moral, anything legal. Just, I want to continue doing this because it interests me. And in the, you know, exact same personality, exact same goal as in the comics. There's, you know, it's a one-to-one character here, man.
Yeah. Also, he's voiced by Zack Snyder's Justice League Flash, Ezra Miller. I found out, and I was wondering why that voice sounded familiar to me. But, I mean, by the end of the episode, Debbie's taken Nolan's costume to Art Rosenbaum, who's, you know, like the... I forget what it's Peter or which Gambi it is from, like, the Flash comics that makes all the rogue suits, and he examines, he's like, holy shit, this is... Well, Omni-Man killed the Guardians.
Yeah, this is Darkwing's talons here. This is... Yeah, he's able to instantly, like, recreate the battle in his head just by looking at the tears in the suit. This was... we want to talk about Art's voice?
Well, I think you want to talk about Art's voice, Vin.
The legendary Ooh. Mark Hamill.
Damn right.
And
it also... Sorry, you go.
I just like all of Art's scenes because he comes off as like the toy maker you take you take your son to for the first time, being like, yeah, you want to see, you want your first toy kind of thing. It's a, like the whole scene where Mark gets his first costume and goes talking to Art is just a magical scene that brings back those father-son memories.
Yeah. And also foreshadows something that came a bit later in the comics after Omni-Man's the revelation of Omni-Man. He takes off with Debbie becoming a bit of a drunk because, you know, she and Art start, you know, chugging the juice like that. And I was like, and that came a ways later, if I recall correctly. It's also one of the more powerful comics where Mark kind of confronts her mom and they say very unkind words to each other.
Well, the other thing I have to add about the let's talk about the Invincibles costume. Red pointed this out to me because I didn't know this, but this is actually technically the second version of this costume in the cartoon versus the first version of the costume, because Mark has the second version's boots and gloves versus the first version's.
So it just had, like, bigger knee pads on the second version?
No, the first version had eyes on his... Not eyeballs, but eye, the lowercase like the, I.
The image his, logo, basically.
Yeah, on his boots.
Okay. I didn't notice that. There you go.
And Mark's eye is not the image logo. It has an arrow at the bottom, which the image logo does not.
I always thought just the way the eye is like centerpiece in the costume, I always thought it looked like the image eye.
Yeah, everybody says that.
Yeah, so, you know, we get into episode 7 where Debbie... I love the wiki. After Debbie relocates to the GDA...
Well,
because she and Nolan have that argument.
Yeah, and there's something else to add about the whole thing with Nolan is Nolan comes off as somewhat sinister, especially when he's sitting with Art. But there's a different level to this here that I think is really well done. Is that Nolan genuinely likes Art. Nolan loves Debbie, but at the same time, he has his Voltramite mission. So he's like, the only way I can keep them safe is if I scare them in line. Because he doesn't want to do to them what he did to the Guardians. So in a very, very extremely twisted way, this is his mercy.
I wouldn't say mercy. He's just... He wants his cake and eat it, too. He doesn't want to kill his friends. He doesn't want to kill his wife.
But you get what I'm saying, that there's a very amazing level done here, that, like, there's a level beneath it.
Yeah. Like, spoiler for the comics, but the Viltrumites have lost their humanity, and when they come to Earth, they regain it, and that's pretty much why they all change over time when they spend time on Earth.
Yeah. The one thing I loved about, like, how sinister J.K. Simmons plays Nolan is it leans like he's trying to scare them into falling into line. But you see, like, by the end of the fight in episode 8 where he just takes off, he's like, I'm not going to be able to scare them in line, but I don't want to kill them. That's why, you know, he takes off like that. And it just, I think that plays... You know, more plays better than in the comics.
He takes off because he realizes that he loves Mark. Like, Mark is part of his mission. This is another spoiler for the comic. The Viltrumite race is reduced to only 30 fucking Viltrumites. And they're looking for a place where they can extend their fucking, like, they're looking for another race that they can mate with and create more Viltrumites, and humans are the perfect fucking subject for this.
Yeah, and
that's fucking Nolan's mission, is that he has to go back and report that. Except he doesn't want to harm Mark, he doesn't want to harm his wife, he doesn't want to harm his friends, so he abandons his fucking mission.
Yeah, and there's actually like, we're skipping over episode 7, or as I like to call it, the gauntlet. Because we have an amazing set of scenes where Cecil throws everything at Nolan, everything, and the best he could do is scuff up his shirt and give him a bloody nose.
A $60 billion bloody nose.
Yes, with when the Kira lasers.
I mean, he had more success with the Hail Mary kaiju there than he did with the laser.
What I love is, like, a lot of these things made sense, like the progression of it. I think writing from hindsight is a big component of it, because Kirkman is directly involved with writing these episodes, and that's a beautiful thing there, in my opinion. And one of the things I loved was just, like, because you're asking yourself, why can't they just transport to Eve and Mark's location? Well, first of all, because they had to slow Omni-Man down. And once they did slow him down, it's like, oh, fucking teleporting a 1,000-ton kaiju burnt out the teleporter.
And that whole thing with, like, the translocator wrist, whatever they need to successfully teleport somebody.
Yes.
You know, stuff like that.
I liked how Cecil even spammed it, and even then, like...
Especially in the comics, they reveal it takes $1 billion every time he teleports.
Yes. He fucking spammed that fucker, and he barely got away with a little bit of his tie left.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's a thing, a second or third time he teleports, and you see he's winded because, like, literally they got him out, like, a cat's hair away from Nolan pulping him, and he's like, oh, whoa, that was close.
He's like, I've been close to death before, but boy, did that make my balls jump up to my throat.
Yeah.
And no, the whole thing is great because it's just Cecil and Debbie and everyone is asking why. And Nolan still has some of that Vulturemite conditioning in his head that is like, well, they aren't worthy to know why. All they need to know is they have to trust me if they want to live. And the only one he sees worthy of knowing why is Mark.
Yeah, and the revelation of, like, our DNA is so pure, you know, you're going to live, like, for 1,000 years or more.
Yeah, and, of course, I have to add that we get robots transference into the Rex clone, and the reveal that the robot doesn't transport anywhere without his own personal Optimus Prime.
I kind of want a toy of that, I'm not going to lie.
Just overall, there's lots of great scenes, especially the Mahler twins building a makeshift ray gun out of just junk.
And just, like, that reminded me, there's an episode in Babylon 5 where Londo Malari is, like, from one of those aliens. He's Minbari. God, it was the Narn, the Minbari...
Centaurians.
Centaurians, thank you. The ones with, like, the big, floofy hair.
The Georgiosaurus hair?
Yeah, like...
Not saying aliens.
Yeah, very aristocratic type aliens. And it's this one where he's going to kill somebody. I think it was Jakar who's, like, the Narn ambassador. And he goes to, like, you know, he digs, like, these two parts out of this pot here and pulls out the base from a lamp here. And he's, like, assembling this gun. Which is kind of that scene where the Maulers are hopscotching around and putting this cannon together, and, you know, they miss, and then Rudy's like, my turn.
Yeah.
And then he leaves, and they're like, well, at least we have the plans for this collar, because the Maulers, we forgot to mention, folks, have dug up the Immortal from his grave in Arlington, and they put him together, and he's healing, because they have that scene where they staple his head to his neck. And he's like, yeah, you better get that finished one, Twin says, because you see the staples getting pushed out like Wolverine pushing bullets out of his torso. And then he wakes up and takes off. And I never noticed in the comics that he flew. I always assumed he was, like, physically powerful, but don't remember. Again, it's been a while since I read Immortal that he could fly.
Immortal can go into fucking space. He can't hold his breath as long as a vulture might. He could, like, fly to the moon and back. But
I'm just saying, I didn't know he could fly, so that was a surprise for me.
But the other thing I have to add about that we sort of glossed on was, like, a lot of more of the what Red talked about, the writing from hindsight, because in the cartoon, in the anime series, they have the public funeral for the Guardians, and in the comic, the funeral's there. Everything's right there. The Guardians are really buried right there, but in the animated series, it's like, no, this is the public one. The real bodies are going to be buried elsewhere because of grave robbers and shit. So someone intelligent like the Mullers can find the real graves, obviously. The other thing I have to add about that is writing from hindsight is in the comics, the Mullers making the clone for Rudy, for Robot, is a lot more cut and dry. Like, we agree, here's the clone body. It's perfect, exactly what you wanted. And while here, it's like, they don't trust Robot. So they put all these safeguards in the body, like all these neural overrides and shit like that. And, of course, Robot's like, I'm calling you out on that. I'd be insulted if you didn't do that. It like, there's a lot more detail added in that sort of thing. And the other thing I have to add is I really thought the Maulers empathizing with Rudy was a nice touch, because they've been through this dance before. They know what it's like. There's actually real sympathy in their voices when they're like, yeah, we know what this is like. This is hard.
Especially when, like, Rudy coughs and they're like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
He's still alive.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot more added here, because in the comic, the whole thing with the Maulers and Robot is a lot more cut and dry, a lot more clinical. And I kind of like the animated version of the Mauler twins better, because there's a lot more personality to them.
Yeah, I mean, that comes across with Richardson's voice performance. You know, I would dare say at this point in his life, he's redeemed himself from voicing the Joker in that one animated series that Ben loves so much.
That's not his fault. That's voice direction.
Yeah. I'll never forgive him for Barney Rubble.
Well, that's fair. That's totally fair. And like you said, like the whole, like he guns out like what four Rudy guns out like four robot drones from the truck before, you know, Optimus Prime transforms, and then he takes off when he gets called back to the secret sanctuary of the Guardians by Cecil, and he just says, like, stay there. It doesn't tell him why, just stay there.
Yes, it's
you go, Red.
One of the things I like better in the animated series than the comic is, in the comic, when Rudy shows up as cloned fucking Rex, everybody's like, okay, that's cool.
Rex has this look on his face like, what the fuck, still?
Well, he says, what the fuck.
But in the fucking animated series, everybody's like, what the fuck is going on? This is creepy, man. Like,
I like how Black Samson's like, you didn't even ask. And Rex is like, that's your problem with this? like it's great, because no one gives him a complete pass on this. Everyone's like, okay, fine, whatever, we get it. We have to deal with a world crisis right now, but you're not out of the doghouse.
Like, even Monster Girl realizes, like, why are you a kid? He did it for me. And then she gets creeped out because of it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think Rudy has a very good understanding of human emotions.
I also have to add that the real Rudy, blob thing, it's way creepier in the cartoon than in the comic, because in the comic it just looks like a potato.
Yeah, and also years of reading comics and being desensitized to disgusting pieces of biology such as that, or, well, we've seen it before. It's something about seeing that animated that just kind of ups the ick factor. And then you get, you know, back to the fight, and his power, as that second episode demonstration of Omni-Man's abilities, like with the Flaxons, I don't seeing the spanking that he gives his son in this episode is fucking frightening.
And the amount of emotional scarring, like holding Mark face first in front of a fucking subway train. Oh my God.
Well, what I got from their fight, or fucking Omni-Man's lesson, is he's not trying to convince Mark. He's trying to convince himself.
Yes.
That's what the whole argument is him trying to convince himself.
If anything, he's trying to convince himself that he's still a pure Voltramite, that he's able to do what he thinks needs to be done, but it's like, because I think in his heart of hearts, he knows he can't turn Mark.
But he had to try.
And just the amount of emotion, the emotion they animated in that one line that I love so much is, I still have you, Dad. Just, you know, you have, it's not overplayed or overblown either. You have like Nolan looking down at his hands, and then Nolan looking frustrated and crying and just like broken up. And I love that detail of when he flies in the out of the atmosphere, the velocity burns off like all the blood and his costume becomes clean again. It's like so much detail there.
Yeah. And then you get that shot, like, before, after his tear freezes as he flies away like that. And then we have, like, a pretty good, from comic to screen adaptation of where Mark wakes up after the fight in the comics with Cecil. And, you know, Cecil gives him the lowdown, and, like, this is what's what. And he takes him to the White Room, and I always thought that was both a brilliant conceit and kind of creepy that, like, well, all the water sources in America have been tainted with this chemical that filter out certain spectrums of light. And I was like, wow, that's just creepy.
Turning the frogs gay.
Yeah. And, you know, Cecil offers Mark the job and, like, he's like, well, I'm going to pass because reasons, and then he goes up to the moon or out to space because he sees Alan's coming back. And he's like, "This, oh great, I gotta tell you, there's a Viltrumite." Yeah, it was my dad.
Yeah.
And then they sit down, they have that conversation. It's like, and they have that montage of like all these characters and, you know, events that are gonna happen. And he's like, "So what are you gonna? I'm gonna finish high school." Cool. Screen goes to black, and I was like, "You're gonna say it, aren't you, Seth? You're gonna say it. What's high school?" Like, I fucking love how they ended that. But yeah, I mean, overall, like, I love this first season. Like, there, like you said earlier, Ben, there isn't a lot to hate about this show. And most of it is nitpicky splitting of hairs kind of stuff.
Yeah, it's, again, it's lots of things they did made sense. Debbie finding out and pushing makes her a stronger character overall. I think that's a good thing. And I talked to Red about this too, is I can't help but to feel that one of the reasons why they did this, make Debbie find out and actually push Nolan, was in the comics, for a good period of time until Mark comes back with Oliver, Debbie goes into a very deep depression and alcoholism stage that just did not sympathize her character with a lot of readers. I remember the initial response from the readers at the time is they're like, "Oh, I'm done with this. This is too much." And there's this one line that Debbie said, frustrated and drunk, early after Nolan left, of, "Why did you have to chase him away?" And it just, like, so many readers, I remember, just hated her for that. And in I know it's
I don't know, it was like water off my back, that storyline, because I grew up in a divorced household as a child and I've seen all this shit before, so to me it was nothing. I know it bugged a fucking lot of readers, but to me, it's like, oh, this is what happens when people divorce.
Yeah.
Like, I remember the state of depression my mother went through. And it wasn't fucking pretty. It was worse than Debbie. Debbie fucking was easy street, in my opinion.
The one, like, the whole thing with Amber, I as much as I found it grating, I did appreciate what they did with that, you know, making her more of a character, like somebody that had some effect on Mark's story than the comics. And the whole, like, J.K. Simmons' performance as Omni-Man, like, that's my favorite thing about this first, you know, go-around here. Well, him and Steve Yeun's performance, because, like, they really made me feel the feels with, you know, everything. Like, Mark's joy at getting his powers and Omni-Man trying to deal with the situation as, you know, it slowly spins out of his control. Again, like, the hardest thing to take of that last episode was, like, sitting there and watching this, knowing that Mark can't fight back. Like, he's so outclassed by his dad. And then, like you said, Ben, like, I'd have you, and he takes off like that. That's incredibly powerful.
Yeah, and it was really well done. I mean, I'm extremely happy to hear that they get a two-season renewal, season two and season three. I want to see season two and season three. I'm happy. It's just, I'm not sure how long they're going to run this Amber thing, because if they start season two and they already broke up again, I'll be happy, honestly. It's
Well, I pointed this out offline, is that the whole thing that attracted Amber to Mark was the mystery surrounding him, how he's always leaving and disappearing and stuff like that. But it's the same thing that gets her angry at Mark.
Yeah. Absolutely true.
Yeah. And again, from the comics, like, stuff they improved on versus the comics versus the show was, like, Debbie's reactions. It, you know, because you see it in the comics, but it's, you know, again, going to Sandro's performance, like, there's so much more you get from hearing it versus reading it. You know, and the animators did over time, like, to get those little facial tics in and the long, awkward pauses and such like that. It's just great. Like, again, I can't complain about the short. Dear God, we've come full circle.
My only complaint is, in the comics, Nolan's my favorite character. He goes through a redemption arc. He becomes a better man in the end. He probably has the best fucking arc, character arc, in the entire comic. And the last episode kind of makes him irredeemable for how much shit he fucking does.
Absolutely.
Well, some of the episodes as well, like how he fucking tries to gaslight Debbie and shit. Like,
it's,
I can't see myself liking Nolan the same way I do in the TV series as I do the comic.
I wholeheartedly agree about that, because there's something about Nolan in the comic, because lots of people died when Nolan fought Mark in the comic. But that was more a consequence of them fighting across the globe, pretty much skipping like a rock on a pond into different cities. There was nothing really super intentional about it. While here, like, every little thing, like the throwing the buildings, throwing Mark through buildings, holding Mark up in front of a train, it's super intentional, super dark, super just horrible. Like, it's the difference between accidentally stepping on an ant and looking out for ants to step on.
Yeah. And in that final fight where they're, you know, tearing Chicago a new one, you know, that scene where Mark tries to, like, you know, catch the building and save the mother and her daughter. And I think that's kind of a callback to where he hit that old lady in his first fight with the teen team and tried to save her, and how, you know, he almost wasn't able to handle, you know, what had happened. And it's just like this constant, like just driving it into the ground. He's like, you can't stop your father.
Yes. I get but, it. Go ahead, Red.
Like I said, it was more, he wasn't really talking to Mark. If you watch the episode, he's talking to himself because he's like, why are we wasting our time fucking saving these people when they're so fucking,
they live their lives instant.
Their lives are so short and they're so fucking delicate and shit. Like, he crushes that guy's head in front of Mark. But the whole time, he's been saving people. He's been helping people. He's convincing himself that that humans are worthless. At the same time, he knows better. Like, he loves fucking Debbie and he loves Mark. That's the whole reason why he runs away, is because he can't fucking kill Mark because he loves him.
Yeah. And Nolan's redemption arc is going to be a hard hill to climb. I look forward to seeing them try because, like Red, I have a lot of fondness for Nolan's character. Nolan's redemption arc is going to be amazing if they do it right. And part of that is going to definitely require the whole story with him and Alan in prison.
Now, if there's one thing I want to see going forward in this series, I kind of like that one issue where Mark met Science Dog. I would like to see that.
That'd be season two.
There are lots of great jokes about Science Dog and Science Dog's creator in the comics that they just can't do here. Like, one of my favorites is Mark is talking to the creator of Science Dog. He's like, how do you get to do so many these issues so quickly? He's like, we reuse panels all the time. And Mark's like, isn't that cheap? And literally this page where they're doing this is reusing the same two panels.
That's a very meta thing. And we should mention, Science Dog is a comic book in the Invincible Universe, folks, that Mark loves reading.
Yes.
You know,
they did a miniseries of Science Dog. Yeah. I think in Image, that's why they can't use Science Dog. They have to use Science Dog.
Yes. And that's another thing is the crossovers are in the comics are 99% of them we're not going to get. The reason why we're able to have Cecil is because Kirkman created Cecil. Same thing with a lot of the other characters we see in, like, the Cecil's organization are created by Kirkman. Are we going to see, like, the old immortal guy? What's his name? The guy that...
Britt?
Are we going to see Britt? Because I know... Wasn't Britt a Kirkman creation?
Yeah. Yes. It's actually, I think, in Brit Cold Weather, which I think is the first one-shot that Kirkman did with him. I think that's canonically in the comics the first appearance of Cecil.
Yes, and that's
why I'm not sure on that.
Cecil is also a Kirkman creation. So Kirkman, you know, we might have Brit show up. We might have lots of the other characters show up that Kirkman himself has a co-creation credit on, because Kirkman has the ability to, you know, pretty much pay himself the license for $1 if he wanted to. But we're not going to see Savage Dragon. We're not going to see Witchblade. We're definitely not going to see Spawn.
No, but we could see the Astounding Wolfman.
But why?
No.
Why not?
No.
Oh my God, you're right. Sally Wolfman is a Kirkman creation.
That's what I told you in the first episode we talked about.
I know. I don't like Astounding Wolfman. It feels like someone went like, hey, remember when Jameson's son could turn into a Wolfman? Let's like make a whole comic, like, based on the fact that I remember this.
You know, Hawkman's cool. Let's make a wolf version of him.
I feel personally attacked by that, Red. Personally attacked.
Red Ink defeats JT with facts and logic.
What facts and logic?
I'm doing a bit, JT.
I get that, Ben. I just asked for clarification.
Anyway,
and saying Hawkman sucks is not clarification, Red. That's just your opinion.
Well, that's just like your opinion, man. Well, since JT likes Wolfman, are you gonna shout the Saskatoon rules?
No, Ben.
Okay.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
And so let me put it this way. We're more likely to have a crossover appearance with the Astounding Wolfman with Invincible than a one-shot appearance crossover with Spider-Man, which did happen in the comics.
And one panel crossover with Batman.
Yeah.
Which also appeared in the comics. Again, it's like the rights hell that is going on with all these other characters. We're going to get the Brit. We're going to get all the other characters that show up in Invincible Universe. But anyone else in the Image catalog that even show up for a second, we're never going to fucking get. Even with the fact that Kirkman is friends with these guys. Kirkman could, like, have lunch with Eric Larson. He could have dinner with Todd McFarlane. The rights... The television and animation and movie rights.
Alex Dragon already had his own cartoons.
So. Yes, are so tied up in other networks and shit that it's not going to happen. I'm looking forward to season 2. What do you think is going to be the arc for season 2? Let's do some speculation, guys, because we know for sure season 2 is happening. We know we're promised up to a season 3, but we've heard these promises before for other series on Amazon.
I think if they play it right again with they're only doing like 8 episode seasons like this, the first part, say the first 2 or 3 episodes would be, you know, the aftermath and the Guardians kind of reconstituting. I think a large part will probably be the squids.
I think the Flaxons are going to return. Rex is going to take them over and come back in as an adult.
That's an arc that showed up way late in the comics. Like, I think
it's
past the 2/3 points. That would be very interesting if they get that out of the way early. That would mean we'll get an adult Monster Girl way early.
Yes, well, I'm aware that you're a fan of her tits.
I'm just saying she's the most endowed character in the Invincible comics.
Yeah.
And, I think we're going to get a Nyssa for sure.
Oh, that's not even going to be it for debate. We're definitely going to get a Nyssa. I'm thinking they might end season 2 with Thrag showing up, or Thrag being revealed.
Conquest.
Oh, okay. Conquest is going to be a big bag, but I'm thinking like final shot is like a Voltramite or Voltram on the throne is Regent Thrag. You just show him on the throne looking angry and then cut. But Conquest is perfect for ending the season, because then we'll have the whole arc where Eve gets horribly injured and we show her near death boost, which by the way was really impressive in the comics. She burns Conquest's fucking skin off.
Yeah.
Are we going to get fucking Levy show up in season 2?
Probably.
Dinosaurus? Or Tynosaurus?
Season 3.
Dinosaurus is probably season 3.
Okay. Now, here's the big question then. Who will be voicing Anissa?
I don't know.
Ooh.
Who should be?
First one that popped in my head is Katie Sackhoff, like Starbuck from the new, like the remake of Battlestar Galactica.
Don't you mean, what's her name from Mandalorian?
yes, also that character, but when I think Katie Sackhoff, I immediately think of Starbuck. Or bitch pudding from Robot Chicken.
I have a weird pick.
Okay.
Lucy Lawless.
That could work.
One thing I do have to note is I kind of feel bad that, you know, they hint at other Vulturemites. We see prominent Vulturemites that show up later in the comics in the Nolan's flashback. We see Chick with the dagger hair braid. We see the black Vulturemite guy. I think we even see Eye Patch Vulturemite. But they did not show Anissa at all in those flashbacks.
Yeah, also, in the comic, I thought there was more than 30.
It thins out of a huge amount because when Nolan and Alan escape the prison, they kill like 15 Vulturemites with Battle Beast. After then, you know, when Nolan is talking to the Coalition of Planets, he's like, there's only 35 left. Keep in mind, he's saying that after him and Alan and Battle Beast fucking wrecked the Vulturemite prison and killed a lot of them.
And I got to say, one of my favorite exchanges between Mark and Alan in that last episode is like, well, you know, my people, you got the breeding Canada, I don't even know my father. And like, they have that little moment of bonding between, you know, Mark not having a dad anymore and Alan never knowing his father.
Now, the greatest thing about Alan as a character is, and by the way, I'm a big fan of Alan the Alien, or the Great Alan, or whatever you want to call him, depending on the part of the comic, is Alan has this like genetic thing where he's almost technically like Doomsday.
So he has kind of what the Vulturemites have. It's like you can't quite kill him because he just comes back and you can't use the same trick twice.
Yeah, like literally he was once ground down to where he was a stub. Like his arms and legs were gone. He was like a floor mat.
Yeah. Now, here's one thing I want to ask. Design-wise for Mark's costume, we have the original, you know, yellow, blue, and black. And eventually, later on, I think that was it before or after the Invincible War?
After.
That he went to after, where he has the blue-black. How soon do you think the blue-black costume shows up?
I hope it never shows up. I fucking hate the blue-black.
That's fair.
I don't think it's going to show up because they used it to make fun of Miles Morales.
Yeah, for people who know in the comics, there's a brief period where a black superhero named Bulletproof becomes the Black Invincible, and the story is so on the nose. Like ridiculously on the nose. I almost imagine Brian Michael Bendis called Kirkman up. He's like, hey, come on, man, really?
I thought we were cool, man. Yeah. I mean, there's that. It's the one thing. One of the spin-off titles from the Invincible universe was, you know, the Guardians of the Globe and then an Invincible universe, which is kind of like, you know, the old like Green Lantern Quarterly comic where the artist Todd Knock did a lot of art in there. And just through his work and Otley and all the artists who worked on here, there's such a plethora of great designs coming in. Like, I honestly would like to see Britt come in, like maybe season 3, have him become like a recurring character, like a counterpoint to Cecil in some respects. And I know, have you ever read like the Guardians of the Globe comics, Red?
Some of them, yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember, was it Le Bruxer, which is this super-powered French pug or French bulldog that smokes? I kind of want that one to show up. I don't know. Like, just to see the absurd image of this dog that barks. Even his captions in the comics are like Le Bark, or their cat, like, what do you call it, asterisk on it to indicate, you know, bark in French. Mm-hmm. I know. What are some other, like, from the Guardians side of the Invisible Universe, a couple of characters you would like to see?
Best Tiger.
Oh, God, the John Woo character? God, yeah.
So there's lots of weird characters that show up in Invincible Universe. Some of them are great. Some of them are god-awful. Like, you have, what's her name? You have the chick with the boxing gloves.
I can't stand her.
She's fucking awful.
Isn't she, it's something Shot or Bombshell or something like that. Isn't she, doesn't she marry, like, Kid Thor, the guy that can't let go of his hammer because he died one time, and the hammer will bring him back to life, but if he ever lets go of it...
Yeah, he's got awful. Again. He's got awful, too. Jesus Christ. Like, I love the universe of Invincible. I love most of the side characters. They're interesting. But my God, Invincible Universe brought some really terrible fucking scrub characters. Like, you have the chick with wings, and what does she do? I don't know. You have a female speedster that does fuck all. I mean, it's...
I want Kaboomerang.
Oh, my God. Like, if I had to pick a character that should have shown up in season one that I would have liked to see, probably the elephant, because, my God, it's a... Like, the whole thing with the elephant is, like, it's like a little homage, callback, reference to, like, early Spider-Man, Ditko, Rhino shit. It's nice, it's cute, it's clever. And then Mark...
You do see the elephant.
I didn't see the elephant at all.
Yeah. I think it's episode 4. Mark's, like, carrying him by the trunk, flying by Titan.
I'll check. But you get my point, is, like, I'm sorry, but 80% of the characters that show up in Invincible Universe are garbage.
Well, some of them, but
80%.
We get, there's a fair bit. I mean, one character I like from the Guardians comic, like, you know, I said, like, the Le Bruxer, like the superpowered French bulldog. I kind of want to see that. You know, Red One's Best Tiger. I would definitely like to see Shapesmith.
Shapesmith is very important to the story, though.
Yeah. I mean, and there's no guarantee that we'll see him, but I would very much like to see Shapesmith, because, like, the way they write him in the comics is, like, this super nerdy, very energetic, you know, Martian who's like, no, I'm just superhuman with, I can shape change, and has to hide that he's a Martian after everything that went on, but just comes off as very earnest, and I really enjoyed that character.
Well, like I said, everything depends. Okay, pick a character you don't want to show up in the animated series from the comic.
Shrinking Ray. Oh, wait.
Too late. Let me think. Honestly, Red said, like, the chick with the boxing gloves, like, she comes out of Kirkman's Capes miniseries, where I think it was set in Chicago, and there's this group of... They've got this whole franchise thing for superheroes. They work like 9 to 5, and they got health and dental. And I didn't really enjoy a lot of those characters out of that. I just, in general, the Capes crew. Not that they're bad characters. I didn't particularly enjoy them, so I would not want to see them.
Like, the only reason you have characters like those are for group shots and crowd shots of superheroes. That's what they're for. I'm sorry. They're awful. I don't like Bulletproof either, but I know he's showing up in season 2.
Yeah, I wish they would have just kept him in that orange suit with, like, the...
Mark's rejected suit.
Yeah, the proto suit.
The one Mark was like, this looks fucking awful. Here walks a Bulletproof wearing the exact same fucking suit, because he looks like, oh, this is great. This is amazing.
Yeah. Definitely don't want to see that. And, yeah, I don't know how much else we can say, really.
Well, I think Red's right that season two is going to end with the fight with Conquest, simply because it has a lot of events tying up to it. It has enemy's first on-screen, quote, near-death experience. It has more of the Ultramite Empire being introduced. It's just really important to have that there. Do you think we're going to get to Oliver in season two?
Yeah.
Okay.
I think if they do like Oliver at all in season two, it'll be like an end credit or mid credits thing at the end of the last episode.
No,
they're going to do it midway.
It's going to be midway. It's going to be Saiyan's dog shows up, takes Mark to fucking the bug planet. Him and Nolan fucking fight the Viltrumites, where you see the Viltrumites for the first time.
Eye patch and black guy.
And then Eye patch is going to be like, you have 100 years to fucking take over Earth. And then just like in the comic, like maybe next episode, and this is going to show up, and like, you never subjugated these people at all.
Yeah, Conquest shows up, and it's going to be a
fuck. You had one job.
Yeah, it's. I know they have real names. I just forget them. It's like the other Vulturemites. There's like Knife Hairbraid and Black Guy and Eye Patch and Anissa.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I gotta be honest with you. I kind of like near the end, kind of started liking Eye Patch.
Oh, Emperor's Drag?
No. Eye Patch is a fucking creep. He has like 10 wives. Different fucking children or something.
He has like 30 wives, but at the same time, he's not just sitting by listening to Thrag. He's like, fuck it. I care about these people. I'm going to start saving lives.
There's not much else you can do with that.
Like I catch it so like an extreme like, but the other Vulturemites are extreme personalized as well. I can't think of any others. Like, do you remember any of the Vulturemites other than Conquest, Hairbraid Girl, and this Black Guy and Eye Patch?
And Thrag. That's pretty much all the ones that I remember.
Yeah.
Conquest.
Oh, Conquest, obviously.
What I'm hoping is that season three does not end the way I think it's going to end.
How's that, Red?
Anissa on top of Mark.
Oh, Jesus Christ. They might just do that because if they get to a season four, they're going to have to, like, number one, I pray to God they don't do a reboot. Because reboot is fucking awful. Whenever I reread Invincible, I skipped that arc.
Didn't they, like, say that was, at the end, like, just an alternate timeline and Mark went home?
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. It burned issues. It was...
It's an alternate timeline, Ben. It doesn't ruin the story.
Well, the whole thing is it's just so they can age up Mark's daughter. That's the whole reason why it exists.
Yeah. And it's just boring to read. I don't like reboot. The reboot arc is just one of the weakest arcs of Invincible.
Like, I enjoy, like, the Angst from Levy stories. I hope they don't bring in his son at the end, because you go from that last issue of Invincible from, like, you know, his son shows up in this dimension. Mark's already taken off, you know, spoiler for the comics, like, we haven't said that enough times this episode. Mark's taken off to become emperor of the Viltrumites and go out and become this force for good in the universe. And then it skips forward, like, 1,000 years later. That's just too much
years.
Time. 500 years later, thank you. I think that's just too much time to fill in with more stories. And if you wanted to bring in the son at the end and have him face Mark, sorry, I don't think that would work.
I don't think they're going to spend all 500 years. I think they're just going to do some stories with Marky. That's about it. But at the same time, I hope Marky does not fucking exist. I'm sorry.
You don't need to be sorry, Red. You just have to have hope that they don't go there.
Oh, they're going to go there.
Could you give them just like 1 second of hope, Ben? Like, give him a chance to be happy.
Red is one of the most pragmatic people I know. He's saying he hopes, but he already knows that Kirkman's going there.
I honestly don't think they're going to. Because if they do that, they're going to get the show canceled.
Marky's going to get the show canceled, not Anissa raping Mark.
Anissa raping Mark is going to get the fucking show canceled.
That's fair.
Like, there are so many different ways that scene could go if they ever do it. Is it wrong for me to picture them playing the fucking song for the Flaxen Attack during that scene? It's in my head and it won't stop. It's awful.
Like, if anything, they might have a similar scene, but Mark cheats on
Eve.
That's going to be awful, too. But honestly, the other thing I want to add is one thing I did enjoy was there was a subtle thing they did with the show where they put in a lot of like late 90s, early aughts music in there, and it really helped give that feel. And I'm not even a fan of like the music being used, but I appreciated what it did with the feel of the show for me, because it brought me back to that time. First ring Invincible in the comic shop. It was like, wow, I'm back there now.
I can see that. I mean, I didn't have that reaction myself, but I can certainly see that, you know, happening.
Like some of those songs that they were playing, I remember hearing in the comic shop back in the early aughts, going to the comic shop and like browsing through the books and buying my pull list. I remember hearing a couple of those songs. Because I remember thinking back then, my God, I hate this music.
Yeah.
But now I appreciate just the nostalgia. It gives me.
Music wasn't that bad.
Well, I was a very contrarian kind of person in the early aughts of this isn't 70s, 60s, and 70s music. I like 60s and 70s music. I was a weird kid back then. Anyways,
shocked and amazed by that revelation, Ben.
Anyway, season one Invincible, love it. I recommend anyone who went through all this and even heard all the spoilers, you have to watch it. I love it, and our complaints are minor at best. Red, what do you think?
It's a good fucking series. Watch it.
Yeah, JT.
I say watch it twice and then read the comics, you Luddites.
And be prepared for lots of changes. This is your host, Ben.
JT from Saskatoon.
Reading.
We're saying goodnight.
So long.
Peace out.